All right, the steering committee, we're back. It's been a little while, but we're back here. We're actually sitting outside on a lovely Monday evening here in Denver.
It's Sylvan.
What does that mean?
Idyllic. Birds are chirping. It's
Once again, Ryan has impressed me with his vocabulary. The person who actually uses words for a living is being taught by the master over here, so... I like that term, Sylvan.
Sylvan, right?
All right, yeah. Well, that's true.
Okay. Verdant.
I
would even say it's verdant. Am I pronouncing that correctly? It's green. Yes. It's not always green in Denver. It's green.
No, it's very green. Yeah, we just come out of our rainy season. We're coming into our kind of hot season, but everything is still green right now. So.
Yeah, I think they said something like 2 inches more in rainfall this year than all of last year.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So, and you see it up in the mountains. I mean, you see that.
Yeah, it's really,
really idyllic up there.
And we still have snow, too, as we witnessed a couple days ago.
Yeah, we had a nice drive. I was going to say, we'll catch up people here. I my Subaru is back in action. It was out of commission for a little while, but had a little work done on the clutch, and I wanted to kind of shake it out a little bit, so... I texted you kind of late.
Shake the Cheerios out? What?
Well, definitely shake it. Well, yeah. No, not kidding, though. Shake out some Cheerios, some goldfish, some applesauce packets, and a lot of debris that had fallen into the car while it was parked for while sat parked for a while.
You may have a kid in that one of the cracks of the seats.
Maybe.
Kidding. Okay.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, well, they're quieter and more.
Dumb joke. I'll edit that out.
Than my actual kids, so I might trade them in. So I'm just kidding. I love my kids. Yada, yada, yada. But I texted you kind of late on Friday.
Remind me again, this is a very special Subaru, Doug.
This is. For those who don't know, I have a 2005 Subaru Legacy GT wagon manual transmission.
Pretty much the GT car of the
Subaru lineup of it.
As
I was telling you, I feel like there was this time period where Subaru kind of went a little crazy for a little while. They're kind of a conservative company in general, in the early 2000s, they kind of just decided to drop. Basically, the STI drivetrain into as many different things as they could. And so it was in the Legacy GT, this was a Legacy, lowered, better suspension, better drivetrain. They dropped the powertrain into the Forester for a bit.
Right, that's the Outbacks. XT 2.5 or 2.5 XT, if I'm not...
Yeah, which you see those running around here in Colorado all the time.
Yeah.
Because they're big and boxy, so people can fit their stuff in.
And they were probably cheaper at the time, too.
Oh, yeah. They fell off the depreciation curve. And I don't know if they're ever going to be like a classic, but you see some guys who even tune them up to do kind of like a... Subaru never offered an STI Forester, but people have dressed them up to look like that kind of thing. But anyways, it's a fast car. It's nice. It's nothing crazy.
It's about 250 horsepower, right?
250 and 250 pounds per
Which
torque. Yeah,
was well about the same as the V5 S4, right? Mm-hmm. Of a couple years previous, so. Kind of right where things were at. And,
it was all of a sudden Subaru had a car that I think. I mean, it's It's closer to the S4 than you would think, basically.
Right.
It was less expensive and doesn't quite hit the same exact numbers, but it's not as far off as you would think.
No.
And they only offered it in the manual for the 1 year, the 2005, so the manuals are of the station wagon. So they're considered kind of unicorns. But it was just a fun drive. It was great to get that out. You decided to come and ride shotgun. You were my rally co-driver.
Yeah, I had kind of a crummy week. I just wanted
to sit. Yeah, you just wanted to relax.
Yeah.
You just wanted to relax and chat, and that was fun. But so we went up... one of your favorite roads.
Yeah, so if you're Japanese listeners, I mispronounced this word. The Japanese word for sort of an out and back.
Uh-huh.
Our friend RJ Munt in Japan, he explained it to me in a text message that I don't have in front of me right now. But basically, this is this road that I sort of liken to Hakone in Japan, sort of this great mountain pass, basically.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of a hike from here, so I don't drive it as often as some of the other roads, but it's a good road, isn't it?
It's a great road.
A lot of elevation change, which is not necessarily what I look for in a good road, but on top of everything else.
But it's good. It's good. It's got a nice mix of, I think, some tighter, more technical turns, some faster sweepers, a couple, some passing zones here and there in case you ever get stuck behind somebody too slow. But
passing zones are few and far between on some of these roads, so that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
And a lot of bikes.
Great views. Yeah, bikes are basically... once you get to a certain point, your biggest concern is just bikes and just making sure you're not going to like take somebody.
But that's it was a Saturday morning. I mean, you know, that happens. But yeah, great road, right? You kept it on the road, and you know, and I was impressed with the with the car just from the passenger seat. That was very smooth, quick, just a good, you know, didn't push like you know maybe some. That's cars do or you know I think that helps. It's a little it's quite a bit lighter than say an S4 of the era but
well,
anyway
it's only got that flat four over the wheels so like a set of the big
right eight, I'm sure so, it's you know, that makes yeah, a difference. Yeah absolutely so, yeah. Lower, but really interesting because you're a husband and a father you got a call on the way home to pick up a few things at a Home Depot.
Yeah,
and so we went to Home Depot. If you know Denver, it's the Home Depot on Santa Fe.
Yeah,
kind of off I-25 there. And but we made a wrong turn or missed a turn, and we went around the block. And I'm so glad we did because we saw a car that I'm sure I've never seen before.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't exactly sure what it was when I saw it. I knew the maker.
Okay, just
let me describe this. So it was a Checker cab.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So sorry, sorry to disappoint anyone who's hoping for a vintage Ferrari, but this is a vintage Checker cab, right? So I think they made them up to 82, 83 or so. So anytime you see a Checker anymore, it's kind of...
the Marathon automobile company, right? Marathon?
Yeah, or I think Marathon maybe was the civilian car side or whatever, because they made, they, you know, I don't know that it ever sold very well, but they had a line of, you know, non sort of, industry cars.
So yeah, theoretically, you could buy one of these cars.
Absolutely. In fact, they had opera windows in some of them and some other, it's always kind of fun to see a Checker cab. I'm old enough to remember riding in Checker cabs as Checker cabs, you know, on a handful of occasions. And you know, just seeing them around, and
were they in New York City? Were you in New York City, or was this
Lawrence, Kansas? I vividly remember taking a cab to the museum with my mom one day, and my sister probably sitting in the back with a little jump seat or whatever it was, the partition, and it's just, and I the mechanical you know meter and all that. I vividly remember that it was raining. I even remember that, but you used to see them around, just old ones in Chicago once in a while. I don't think I've ever seen a Checker. In my time in Denver.
No.
But what was interesting about this, it wasn't just a cab or whatever. It was a like a 12-person long wheelbase model.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is it was
like
open.
Limo. It was like a checkered limo. Yeah. Open checkered limo.
Right, but it was also open. Yeah. And it had, and I'll forget the term here, but you see mini mokes or Jeeps, sort of these island vehicles where they have sort of this tasseled, it's a Surrey top, I think is what they call it, you know? And so it had this sort of Surrey top. If I remember, it was sort of this pale yellow. It looked like original. There's kind of a, I don't know, kind of a long hair driving it and, you know, maybe just taking it around the block or working on it or whatever. And so, you know, I knew it was a Checker and I knew it was something interesting. I knew they made airport shuttles and things. And but I had never seen a model like this. And when we were thinking about what we were going to talk about tonight, I thought, well, maybe I'll look up that car and just sort of see what the story is. Apparently, it's called the Checker Aerobus. And that was, so any of these extended wheelbase sort of airport shuttle or resort vehicle type cars. But the article I read, interestingly, said that there was one convertible known to exist. But it's right now, as far as we know, it only exists in a promo photo from the era.
Hmm.
And sure enough, that photo looks just like the car we saw, Doug.
Oh, wow.
So either someone has gone to the lengths of, no pun intended, of trying to recreate that model, which I have all the things to recreate, right? Or we saw the car that some people think is a missing vehicle or, you know, a loss to time, like it's, you know, the 48th Tucker.
Well, the Checker Owners Association probably wants to contact us.
Well, I don't know.
Because let's game it out. I mean, so it sounds like these airport shuttle models were pretty rare in themselves.
They weren't
many of those, right?
Right.
So if it's not the one from this promo photo, then someone took a pretty rare thing and cut the roof off of it.
And
which is doesn't always go well.
No, and this paint that we saw looked original. Yeah. And I could have seen this like up at Estes Park or, you know, some resort or ski resort or something, you know, being used. Or, you know, one of the national parks or something.
Yeah.
Not quite a sports car, not quite a whatever, but
an unusual car, though.
May have been the rarest car we have or have not seen. So,
well, whenever you see possibly one of one, that's always interesting.
Yeah, so we'll have to do some more digging. I'll follow up on this, but what I thought was just sort of an interesting...
We'll get the steering committee investigation.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. So. I'm sure the guy knows what he has, or you'd think, but, you know, I kind of feel like with the the internet and everything, the days of, like, sort of the lost... I don't know, masterpieces or whatever are gone to some extent.
They're kind of like one
of course,
these...
barn finds every day, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah. Although, I thought it was funny. Someone sent out a picture of a barn find, and they said, look what I found, and it's a picture of a classical Porsche, and they had to move two pieces of plywood to get to it. They're like, two pieces of uncut plywood, in the barn.
You wonder sometimes, right?
Well, reference to just how expensive lumber is right now.
I didn't even get that. I thought it was the quote-unquote barn finds that are necessarily always...
This is a joke about how expensive wood is right now.
I see.
But when you see sort of like a misfit sort of like car like that, though, I think that's gotten me. I assumed when you and I saw it that he had just done that. He had just extended it. But now that it might actually be this rare missing.
Let me show you the picture, and you tell me if this looks familiar. I mean, it's just the cuts were in the same place. I mean,
it's basically
looks like a pale yellow in this black and white photo, but what do I know?
It's basically the roof is cut out in the middle section.
Yeah.
It has like where the driver and the passenger
It's a landau or a landau or however you pronounce
it. Those old terms
but with a cover in both ends, you know?
Yeah. The middle's open. So that's interesting. I wonder if it was used at like at a small airport up here, you know, pick people up and take to...
Right? Yeah. I mean, stranger things have happened. So anyway,
that's great. That's fantastic.
You know, it's not quite it's not a Porsche GT4, but apparently Porsche GT4s are Porsche GT4s.
By comparison, though, I mean, they make as many GT4s as people will buy. This is very rare.
Terrible segue was basically just so I could gloat about the 718 GT4 that just sold on Bring a Trailer for $127,000.
How's your investment doing, Ryan?
Well, so I want to talk.
It's looking pretty good right now.
Well, at least I'm not underwater, right? I mean, so this is, I guess, what caught my eyes. I think this is the first 718 GT4 that's sold in auction on either of the two big car sites.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. So have there been non-sales, or is this the first one to...
BAT pretty early in the game, I think, before people realized sort of what it was.
BAT is Bring a Trailer.
Bring a Trailer. And I think that the guy basically had it listed for sticker, and at the time it didn't garner sticker.
Yeah.
But this one sure did. This had it had an MSRP of 118. It sold for 127. It's an interesting spec, not one I think a lot of people would expect, and so to speak, and that it's got
it only had 500 miles on it or something?
700, I think, 719. It's GT silver, so it looks like mine.
Yeah.
It has the steel brakes like mine. It differs in that it has the satin wheels, so mine is black wheels. I feel like a lot of the silver cars have black wheels. But then there's the satin, which is sort of a gray, and then you can get the silver wheel as well, which is more common, I guess, on the Spider. But it does have the more advanced headlights.
I didn't know there was a headlight option.
Oh, there were three headlight options, I think there were when I was, or more.
Which headlight?
I have the basic Xenon headlight, which I chose because of the shape. It's more classic. It's got and it's cheaper, and I don't drive at night anyway. So, not in that. So
it might as well be stickers.
No, just I thought it looked more timeless. I did. Right. Like a NASCAR. Car. Yeah. So it was nice to see this car sell for more. But again, it had kind of that spec because you saw it, Doug. Not a bad spec, but it has the 14-way power seats. So everyone always talks about how they want the LWBs, the carbon back seats. I've got the middle ones with that are, as far as lightness, that are a couple pounds heavier, but they would be the upgrade seat on a non-GT car, but they're the default seat on the the lower level seat. And then, of course, then you can get the full sort of bore luxury I have the 2-way. This is the 14-way, and I've never liked it, although it doesn't look that much different than the seat I have. It's just a little, the base is a little more substantial. It's got more buttons on the side. It's just,
well, and you know, it has some motors inside.
Yeah,
it.
And it's quite a bit heavier. Yeah, it's quite a bit heavier. You know, it's heavier. So it just, to me, always sort of seemed a little out of place in the GT cars. Yeah. At least get the 2-way or whatever, but especially because it's more expensive. Like, it's cheaper to not get it. But and then there, like, the other weird thing I thought about this car was GT Silver, but they blacked out the Porsche badge across the back, like the light bar sort of thing in the back, which I did in mine as well. But then where I kept the GT3 badge in the satin, so
GT4.
Basically, I'm sorry, the GT4 badge, it's satin. So basically,
did you spec yours with a GT3 badge?
Well, it really is a sleeper. But, you know, so now where it says Porsche GT4 in the same finish. Well, this car, they paid extra to black out the Porsche, but then they paid extra again to make the the GT4 badge gloss black.
Yeah.
It's got the dual, you know, dual zone, zone climate control, which I have in mind, which I wouldn't have specced, you know, if given my given the choice. It's got the adaptive lighting. It's got some of these other things too, but so it's sort of a mid low to mid spec, I would call it, but it doesn't have a lot of the features that you know, an enthusiast driver necessarily would want. I think they'd rather just go without on some of these and have a more base model, right? Yeah. Or go, you know, all out, get the buckets, get the carbon brakes and all that. So anyway, I guess what I'm getting at is there's some things about this car that were desirable, others not particularly desirable. Pretty average car in a lot of ways. To see it bring in, you know, 10 more or whatever it was than you know, sticker was good to see. Of course, I was always hoping for a little bit more. You know, all the experts on, you know, in the comments, you know, come on. Well, and
so a couple things. I mean, so 750 miles.
719.
What was the recommended break-in for that?
1,000, I believe. It may have been 1,200 or something, I think, translated from kilometers, but around 1,000 miles. And I observed that, generally speaking.
You were pretty diligent about that. So do you think this person... just didn't like it?
I think the story goes...
the opportunity that they just wanted to sell it?
They were some sort of dealer, not a Porsche dealer, but some sort of like, you know, high-end car dealer who bought it personally... maybe in the hopes of then flipping it after a while. That's the story. That's sort of the story the impression I got. But, you know, I think he said he basically bought it to be a demonstrator, whatever that means.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, it was good to see, good to see it sell for more than, I know everything. Listen, I know everything is up right now. I don't think it's unique to this car.
Well, everything's up.
I've
been reading a number of articles that basically also say, like, there's not necessarily an end in sight on this stuff. Even when supply chain stuff will come back and that'll take some of the downward pressure on some of the higher end used cars.
Right, right.
But I've been reading these articles saying how a lot of manufacturers are selling they're profiting as much by selling less cars. And so they're basically like, cars are going to be kind of like,
well,
high in demand for
a while. Yeah. And I think that people, you know, with more electrification talk and all this, this may very well be the end for cars like this for the foreseeable future, right? So
I assume so. Unless
Porsche comes out with that gas they were talking, that magic gas, which...
So I got some thoughts on that.
Okay, well, we should... Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and I've got more Cayman talk. All right, we're back. Steering committee. I was just rambling on about Porsche Caymans as I want to do.
Yeah.
I did want to say this car that sold does not appear to have had any sort of PPF or ceramic coating or anything like that, which I think if it had at least a full front end PPF and some ceramic coating, I think that would have added another $3,000-$4,000 to the price. So
yeah, maybe. I mean, so I think based on what we know, 750 miles, I mean, they would probably still be able to do
719, that Doug.
719.
Well, every mile counts.
Yeah, 719. He should have sold it with 700 with 718 on it.
What's that?
718.
That would have been... Yeah, I bet he tried, and then he just overshot couldn't quite get there.
He moved it one too many times. That's what he was going for. Let's not overlook the fact this is a car that would have depreciated but actually went up instead of being a few thousand dollars less than MSRP, this was $10,000 more.
Yes, so. Yeah. So it brings me to my next observation. Something you brought to my attention. The infamous steering committee.
The base Cayman.
Base Cayman. I got X for was, let's just say, X plus 16 on the internet. As I understand it, I traded this car in, and everyone knows the story, or if you've been listening for a while, it was a 2017 base Cayman, but spec'd really well, but also on a budget. So it had the sports seats, was manual, had the 19-inch wheels. It was a great car, took amazing care of it, you know, had a great exhaust on it, you know, for what it was. When I had the opportunity for the GT4, our friends at Porsche Colorado Springs were kind enough to accommodate me, and I have absolutely no complaints about that transaction. Yeah. You guys are great. But, of course, the world has changed since I traded that car in.
Yeah.
What was it? It was only, 7 months ago or 8 months ago? Yeah. I bought this car in October. Well, yeah, nine months. You figured it out. But, everything's gum up as we talked about the GT4 or anything else. This car has gone up, and apparently after I traded it in, it was sold to someone out in Kansas City, who apparently only had it for how many months? And
what was the mileage? Do you remember when you traded?
I want to say it was 23 or 25. Okay. I think it was 23 and change, maybe. And they only put 1,800 miles or something on it. And I don't know what condition it was, but I bet they didn't keep it as nice as I was keeping it. So this car, and who knows? I mean, asking price, you know,
your level of care for your cars makes it hard for anyone.
Right. As I told Doug, I said it's like seeing your ex on Tinder or something. And I've never been on Tinder, but that's what I understand.
I don't have experience.
You can check my phone. Tinder. I swear. Yeah. No, I just happily married men.
What I would say, it's not quite. It's not like. But I would have to argue that it's not quite like seeing your ex, because it's not like your car left you or you broke up with your car. I guess you did.
Well, but what if you could break up?
I guess you broke up with your car in this analogy. But it's more like, I feel like you're just more like, you might be sad, or you might be jealous to see your ex on Tinder. When you see your old car that you loved, I feel like it wasn't even my car, and I was just more worried. I was like, oh, I hope that car is being treated well.
Well, I'm glad it didn't show it on like a Copart auction, auction with the airbags deployed.
So I've been looking at Caymans like I always do, and I always change my budget depending on how I'm feeling on the particular day. This particular day, I was looking at what the older 718s were going for.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I wanted to look into.
Yeah.
And I recognized it immediately because you're right, when you spec'd it out, I saw the 19-inch wheels on it.
Yeah, which were kind of unusual. They were most of them probably at the 20-inch, and then second to that were the 18-inch.
When you type into your search when you're looking for base or S only, you're seeing a lot of the like 17-inch wheels.
Right. I think those were like the least specials, probably. You know, probably a lot of those were PDK too.
Well, honestly. And a lot of them, when I switch it over to manual, a lot of those just drop off too. But I still see a lot with the, you know, you don't see many with those 19-inch. Nice, like sort of real spindly, wheels on it. So
a little non sequitur here, but did you hear that 70% of the 991.2 GT3s were sold as manuals now that the 70%. Cycle has been complete and we're on to the 992?
No.
70% of those were spec'd with manuals, which is interesting.
That's fantastic.
And how many of those do you think were paint to sample?
70% manual, 89% paint to
sample. Yeah, of course, silver is a new paint to sample. We've talked about this, or black, or red,
silvers. But, that's good news. I'm glad to hear that. Hopefully it means Porsche will keep making a manual transmission, so.
I think they're sort of the, what do you want to call them, kind of the standard bearer or whatever right now. You know, not just Porsche, but they're up there. And, again, I mean,
that car, which is obviously focused for the track, so it's like you think, you know, it's almost like technology where it's like it becomes obsolete, so you want to move on to the new thing. But in anyone that would take like a GT3 on the drive that you and I did on Saturday, there's no way PDK makes that better.
No, that's a great point.
It doesn't matter if you're getting tenth of a second quicker.
A lot of these cars, the gearing's so long now, you're not shifting much anyway. So anyway, but anyway, it was good to see the old car. It's good to see the old car.
I hope whoever gets it. I don't know. I didn't check to see before we came on if it was still there. I doubt it is.
Yeah, I couldn't look a second time. I had to turn the page, Doug. But from pictures, it still looked good. I mean, you know, it's
if it makes you feel any better, it's going to be one of my great regrets in life that I didn't just buy it from you.
Well,
I could have kept it in the family. I'll never find one like
sold it so. 6 months later and made money.
I know I could have done that.
Anyway,
a smart decision. But
moving on.
Much like the car, we're moving on.
Could you see right through that one? Yeah, no, I'm kidding. Yeah. No, I'm very happy with my current.
So in your analogy, though, I feel like your ex-girlfriend, you saw her on Tinder, but you happen to have a new hotter girlfriend that's like, you know, living with you now. So doesn't that soften the blow at all?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? Sometimes basic is fun. And I'm saying.
All right. So you want to go back to like the girl next door as opposed to the Super Bowl?
Why not both? Anyway, I'm kidding. But no. It's,
before we get too far down this misogynist.
No. This was a step in the right direction, right? Everything is an upgrade, right?
The car is definitely could do better, but when I got rid of my fun car, I had to get rid of it and just go to a dadmobile for a while. So you at least got to go up to the next big thing.
You are a dad.
So are you though. Well, I went from a WRX to a Sequoia.
We haven't talked about the Sequoia in a while, but I texted you earlier today when I was sitting in a traffic light. I go down a rabbit hole here, but okay, I thought it'd be real wise, right? I have some Porsche clutter cluttering up the garage.
Oh yeah.
Some old mats from my 997 when I had it that I replaced with at 9,000 miles because they were a little faded. I had
All right, for our audience, I'll go take a look at them and see what a little faded.
Well, they're no longer in the garage, Doug. I threw that and an old car cover I had on eBay.
Yeah.
And of course, they both sold, and by the time I paid for the incredibly expensive shipping, the eBay postage calculator didn't quite compute for me today. Wildly underestimating the shipping cost, and I'm not shipping boxes at the post office ever. So
yeah.
I didn't realize it. A one foot square box that weighs 5 pounds cost $40 to ship or whatever. Just obscene. But anyway,
did you make a profit on it then?
No, not by the time I went to Home Depot to get the boxes that. But when I was going to Home Depot. Very circuitous route here. Sitting in a traffic light. So if you know Denver, basically Colorado and sort of Glendale by the Home Depot.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. Is that like Leedsdale in Colorado something?
It's Colorado, in Glendale.
Alameda. Anyway, whatever. Along that stretch where the BMW dealership is, if you're listening.
Downtown.
And the Mercedes
downtown
dealership.
BMW.
The downtown. That's not a downtown. But. Yeah. Anyway, sitting at a stoplight, rolls up next to me. It looked like a new Huracan. Had a paper plate on it. It sure looked nice. But what struck me was it was definitely the most base Huracan I've ever seen.
Okay.
And it was great. It was just flat black or, you know, non-metallic black. I think painted black wheels. But then the tires, were not like the rubber bands that I'm used to seeing. I don't know if there's a wheel option. Yeah, these had a little sidewall, and the wheels weren't pushed out all the way to the edges, and it looked really good and clean and nice and
I bet it was an earlier. You said it was an Huracan or a Gallardo.
It was definitely an Huracan, however you want to say it. It was definitely, and it could have been used, but even so, it hadn't been out that many years, right? I mean, well,
yeah, I think they came out.
It's been like, 8 years now, I guess.
Yeah, it's been a little while, but so
it was either new or a very clean used one.
Yeah,
but it looks so great in its simplicity.
Those cars they can be like 6 years old and still and only been driven.
I was wondering, either it's an older one or it's a newer one, and are companies sort of returning to a little more sidewall, especially with other advancements and other just design trends and things, you know.
Yeah. Or even better, has our influence reached to the automakers?
Well, because, well, preaching more, the 19-inch wheel and the, yeah.
Are they doing more base and driver options for their high-end cars?
Or is it just that every Lamborghini you see is spec'd out to high heaven, you just don't see, you know, something with a more modest spec? But anyway,
yeah.
But I guess that's especially not even the interesting part.
Especially in the Lamborghini world, where it's like really about like specialization and personalization.
Right. Yeah. But again, is this the new paint-the-sample Porsche? But at that same light, I happened to look across, and there was a red Ferrari California, top down,
yeah,
older couple. And then in the other corner, coming around the corner, was appeared to be an elderly woman rocking a, not a brand new Aston convertible, so maybe it was like a DB, I want to say it was DB9, because that was older. Something in the last, but not a Vantage.
Not the Vantage.
This had the back seat.
This was like the step up.
With her, like her two grandkids, presumably. I mean, forgive me if you're listening on some off chance and it was you and you're not elderly. Maybe it was just my fading eyesight. But
yeah.
With her, like, presumably two grandkids in the back, just cruising down with the top down.
Depending on the situation.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Hey, maybe sisters if they're old enough. You know,
well, good for her.
So it was just kind of a, it was interesting just in one intersection seeing that mix. And had I been in the GT4, it would have made for something.
I feel like the only time I've ever seen something like that randomly where it wasn't like at a car show or something was when I lived in Los Angeles. I used to go out to drive up to Malibu, and you would see something like that. Like, you would just be driving through like Lamborghini one way, Aston Martin another way, you know, just everywhere.
Well, that's,
you know, and that's just, you know, that's just Los Angeles.
Yeah. So. Well, Denver's not LA, but there definitely is money out there and some nice cars and stuff. And
it's not LA, but it's better than Boston, which is, you know, there's money in Boston.
Yeah.
But there's just better weather.
Yeah, So.
Well, I'm guessing it was better than like most of the places you grew up in terms of seeing exotic cars.
Yeah, you used to see a lot of stuff in Chicago.
But like when you lived in Wisconsin, I guess,
bigger percentage of nice cars, exotic cars in Denver than say another town at size like I don't know what's another town, Cincinnati. I have no idea.
If you compare it to something like a Cincinnati or like a Houston or...
Well, Houston's way bigger than Denver.
Is it?
Okay. Houston, I think, is about as big as Chicago now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's coming up quick if it hasn't already. But
Denver and Boston are... Yeah, they're similar. Yeah. Boston, if you talk the entire eastern part of Massachusetts, is much bigger. But like the Boston, greater Boston area is about the same. But and there's lots of money in Boston, but it's like... It's terrible weather for having
cars. Yeah, no,
people have these cars, but you just don't see
them. Two of the three of these were convertibles, too.
You can get a convertible here almost for the whole year. So. All right, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. So go Denver. I mean, no one was going particularly quick, but...
Well, they had their kids in the car, right?
Yeah.
Their grandkids, potentially.
That's true. But anyway... I want to give a quick shout out. Advance Auto Glass in Highlands Ranch.
Yeah.
Pretty sure I got that right. I picked up a stone in the GT4 a few weeks ago. It's been bugging me. It's a tiny little stone, but I didn't want it to spread. It's right in my line of sight. And I think these guys were great. I get there. I basically went there in a huff because I was I'd made an appointment with the place that comes to your house. They'd canceled on me twice, and I just wanted to get this thing done. I had a little window of time. Lunch hour. So I found this place that had great reviews, and I raced down there. It was about 25 minutes from where I live, and I get there, and I realize that there's quite an incline into the shop, right? And there are three entrances, but one incline is sort of sharper than the next. And I thought, gee, I wasted my time all the way down here. I called back, and I said, listen, I'm here. My car is a particularly low car. I don't think I can get up this thing without someone coming out. And next thing I knew, the owner, and I've forgotten your name. I apologize. But he came out and guided me up in a way that I don't think I scraped, or if I did, it wasn't bad because I didn't hear anything. Mm-hmm. And of course, then on the way out, I was on my own. But by that point, I kind of knew how to do it.
You knew the procedure.
And they accommodated me. They were excited to see the car. I took a picture. I got to check and see if maybe
you hadn't told them what it was when you brought it in, or...
Well, I talked to a different person, and I don't think she particularly knew what it meant. And but the cool part was, is he said, no, my car's lower than yours. And I said, really? You know, and, he had a very cool first gen R8 4.2 that he had a wrap on, and HRE wheels, really, really cool car. Oh, so nice. On the off chance, I did tell you about the podcast. I don't think I told you the name of the podcast, but shout out to Advance Auto Glass. I bet it gets back to you one way or another. And anyway, but they did a great job. And unfortunately, when you fill those holes, I mean, they're never quite perfect, and I probably wouldn't notice it if it wasn't right in my line of sight. But what are you going to do? And it sure beats the expense and hassle of a new windshield. So thank you again, guys, for getting me right in and getting me up the driveway and care of me.
Was his, you could see his R8? It was there.
Yeah, he.
Do you think it's actually lower than yours?
Oh, so I didn't. Yes, yeah, so it definitely is lowered, and it also had a lip that I bet it was.
Was his lowered from
start? Yeah, I bet it was a half an inch or an inch even lower than mine in the front, maybe more. It was pretty low, he managed, and I trusted him, and I got in and out of there okay. But the problems of
that splitter. I mean,
that's the thing. It's low, but also sticks out.
Yeah, and it's almost like even if it's not as low, you're just always worried about like just catching on.
Well, and you have the diffuser in the back you have to worry about too. Yeah. So anyway, the last thing I can do is complain about driving a GT4, but it does keep it. It is easier to keep the miles down when it's just a pain in the ass to get it in and out of the house. And you know,
like how long for our listeners at home? Just paint a picture. Like approximately how long does it take to get out of your driveway safely onto the street?
I mean, I kind of have a I kind of know how to do it now.
Yeah.
You know, but it adds a few minutes. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And hell, if I had the buckets, I'd have even fewer miles, I suppose, because you've got to get in and out of the buckets, not just the car in and out of the driveway.
Yeah,
but
yeah. A few minutes to get into the buckets, and then.
Right, especially for me, I gotta grease up. But and you hear the birds. We told you it was Sylvan and Verdant other words I used. What else do you know?
Well, we're coming up on about 40. You want to take
let's take a quick break.
Pause, and then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about we're back into racing.
Yes,
let's talk racing.
We'll So, this is kind of a revelation for me at least.
Yeah,
but we'll be back.
All right, we're back. We're being serenaded still by this bird.
We are.
On this lovely Denver evening here.
We're not drinking Brews beers, though.
No. We still love Brews beers.
Yeah,
we're still a fan.
I've been drinking whiskey today. Yeah. But
we happen to switch. We both now officially switched over to whiskey.
Yeah, so yeah. That's
what are you What are you sampling there?
Something cheap from Total Wine.
Okay.
like cheap in the way that like you think you're ordering a regular size bottle and then you get a handle. You know what I mean? So
you thought you were getting like a 75 milliliter, but then you got the 1.7.
It does the job.
Yeah.
It does the job. Yeah. You know, but then you realize that's like how can they ship and sell water? Anyway,
so
but I still have my sight, so we're good. What about you?
Well, I am bringing. I'm drinking a little bit of some whiskey that a friend of mine brought out. A fan of the show,
yeah,
Chris Young. If you're listening, I'm actually trying, not trying, I've been sampling it for a while here, the Hudson Whiskey out of New York.
Nice job, Chris.
Bright lights, big bourbon.
Yeah.
You like the packaging on it.
I do.
I think it's really,
I think that's cool.
Really pleasant.
I like the bottle.
Yeah. This is a Hudson.
You won't let
Hudson
me try it, but no, I'm kidding.
Well, I brought it over for you to try. You won't finish your own.
Well,
your
this will doesn't
you're
get out as
cheap
quite as easily. So.
Yeah. No, this is straight out of Hudson, the Hudson Valley, Gardner, New York. So. Yeah. It's
very nice.
It's delicious.
I look forward to
so.
Trying a nip.
Yeah, I'll leave
or
well,
dram.
I'll leave some with
some
you
sort
if you
of
want. So, you know, it's not just the big podcast that you get to drink whiskey on these things. Sometimes us little guys.
No,
too,
no, we,
so.
We have to pay for ours still. But
well, that was a gift, so no.
Oh no, you're right. Yeah. The beer, however.
The beer sometimes is a gift.
It's subsidized.
So,
sometimes.
Yeah, we're subsidized
so
on the beer by Ryan there at Brews.
Yeah,
so shout
Brews,
out to them.
Brews Beers, Bruz. Beers.com on Colfax and somewhere on the northwest side that I couldn't tell you where, but
yeah, looking at it. But the Brews on Fax, which is a great tavern,
absolutely.
Over there at the corner of Josephine and Colfax. So
shout
check
out
them
to
out.
Ryan.
It's a great shop, great spot.
And then
so.
The other, what's the other? You have this. You've got two bottles here.
Oh yeah. Well, the other one was actually.
Oh gosh, yeah. That's
yeah. I didn't actually technically. I didn't pay for this.
Speaking of those other guys that do a podcast.
Yeah. Well, my podcasting partner bought me a nice Christmas present of a bottle of Whistle Pig piggyback.
And somehow it remains unopened.
Well, I was saving it for when you and I opened it together. So, you know, so we'll still save that. So.
Okay. All right. So. We're not quite at that data point, right?
We said we were going to
crack that open a certain
as soon as we were
going to
crack it open the first time. Yeah, or that, or we were supposed to do it the first time we had a show back live in person.
Ah, is that what
and
it
then
was?
We missed okay. that. We missed yeah. that by a while.
Yeah.
So, well, anyways, we'll save it for a big milestone. So
sounds
so help,
good.
Help us push our downloads through so we can try this Whistle Pig. So.
Yeah, you know, it would probably help if we did more than one a month.
So
anyway,
anyways,
you had something to say.
I got something to say.
Yeah.
I got something to
grind
say.
Grind those gears.
I feel like that's, this is, yeah, it's not like that's the NWA introduction. It's like, you know, it's like, dude, yeah, I got something to say.
Do you know how
yeah.
tame that stuff sounds now?
Some of it, yeah. Some does, yeah. So, still so good, though.
Oh, yeah, it's the best.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we both have recently jumped a little bit back into watching some auto racing. I've gone down the full rabbit hole of Formula One again.
So. And I don't think it was just because it was raining out that day.
No. Well, for me, it's been a little more long time coming.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, that Netflix documentary got me way back into it. I watched it pretty closely and religiously when I was in high school and early college. Uh-huh. And then I kind of fell out of it for a while. That was a long time ago, as we may or may not know. It's been about 15 years since I've really closely watched it. And I've jumped back into it recently. Mostly because of that documentary series on Netflix.
Which one?
Oh my god! No. Everyone knows it though.
You're a liar.
It's the only it's the only Formula One. So basically, they've been following the last.
Yeah, like, I know what you're. I actually know what you're talking about, but I couldn't tell you the name. I couldn't tell you that it's probably like Fuel or something.
No,
I don't know. Whatever.
But it's really good. Yeah. When you get your Netflix open and you look into it, you'll find it pretty easily. But it's one of the higher rated shows.
If you're listening, the algorithm will have it right there on your...
Yeah, now that we're... Exactly. Well, now that this is on, so... but it's it got me back into it. It's called Formula One, Drive to Survive.
There you go. The name of it, so. Not anything like Fuel.
Fuel. but also, they've introduced... And the first set of regulations went in this year, and the next set will be next year, which will be even bigger, to try and make it fair.
Yeah.
Because right now, basically, like three or four teams with the biggest budgets, just they dominate the entire series.
But
they're trying to make
Formula
it more
One
egalitarian,
is,
though.
How many builders are in Formula One?
When you say builders, do you mean like how many auto manufacturers?
So we're going to segue into it because I watched the Indy 500 for...
Yeah.
This is the first time I've watched it from very beginning to very end in several years.
Yeah. Gael Castroneves, Spider-Man.
I know. Well, we'll come back.
So did I jump I ruined the punchline there?
No. We'll come back to that.
But
what I was going to say, though, is in IndyCar, I think they're right currently, there's one chassis builder and two engine builders, right?
Yeah.
And so it's Honda and Chevy, and is it Dallara or whatever is the... Yeah. I could be way wrong on that.
You know, but that's been... I used to watch IndyCar a lot, too, and that had been the case for a while. There were times where there were two chassis manufacturers, but like 80% of the teams had one.
Yeah. There was Lola, there was Eagle.
A,
but I remember when there were Menard, five or six engine builders, you know?
Well, the engine manufacturers, that is a little different, because when I was watching it, there was at least three or four.
Yeah.
IndyCar, though, they do... I mean, one of the things that they do probably a little bit better than Formula One, and it's a trade-off, and it's a balancing act they have to do, but they have a more competitive race series, though. They have different drivers winning, you know.
Well, I was going to... So what is Formula One again? What's the sort of breakdown right now?
Well, so in terms of... So there are... each team has to build their own car, or... What they do is they kind of buy a lot of parts from a bigger team,
maybe some of the
last year's technology.
So that's
each team has to produce their own car. So the top teams, which are at the moment are the Mercedes, the Red Bull team, McLaren, Ferrari, they produce their cars ground up built every year from scratch. So it's a new design each year, and they have to go out and they sort of have to hunt for a engine manufacturer to kind of sponsor them to pay for that. So Mercedes is Mercedes. They're paying for that. And it's not Mercedes. It's not like an engine they pop out of the assembly line.
Sure,
like
of course.
It's a ground build-up engine.
Right.
But, you know, Red Bull has Honda as a power plant this year. Ferrari just, you know, has Ferrari.
Right.
They just get sponsors to pay for that. McLaren has I believe they're actually using Mercedes engines as well.
Is that right?
So that's what's interesting is that sometimes the top teams will actually sell like engines to other teams.
Yeah. See, I have no, I have a bit, you know, somewhat of a command of Indy racing, just having grown up in Indy, or living there
in Indianapolis. Yeah,
yeah, but yeah, F1 is just, you know, it's just been pretty inaccessible for a lot of us. And
well, and it's just it's moonshot stuff that they do.
Yeah,
it's basically
like,
you know, unless they have a regulation for it, they can do, you know, if they come up with a new idea, they throw. I mean, the budgets for these teams is in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well,
so
what race did you? So you.
I've watched most of the season so far, but most recently I watched Monaco 2 weekends ago.
That's right, and then it was
this weekend was Azerbaijan, which is Baku.
Yeah, Baku,
is the capital city.
Yeah,
really, I didn't know. That's one race that's the first time I've watched it because it only came on the schedule in 2016.
Okay.
So this is my first season back.
Well, there's some unrest there.
Well, yeah, there's a question as to like what cities is Formula One going to, and they're going to
always the most ethical of organizations.
Well, they go to all the traditional European countries, mm-hmm. but then they also Azerbaijan's on the calendar now. Sochi is on the calendar. Malaysia. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Malaysia, I guess. But
they just need someone in Brunei.
Well, they're not Brunei, but they have. What's the other Middle Eastern country that they go to? They go to Bahrain.
Right. So this has been in the news for the ethics and the.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a question mark about some of the ones that are getting approved. But political issues aside, the track of Azerbaijan is incredible.
Yeah,
it goes to the city,
but
it has huge straightaways.
Uh-huh.
So basically, at times they're sort of
right over
through
enemies.
Like old castles and like going through there. They don't have to worry about that. But then another section they're going like flat out at 190 miles an hour through the city, which is insane.
Yeah,
is what. So this race,
that sounds awesome.
Well, it gives a lot of opportunities to pass. This race, though, was just full of really interesting things that happened. A guy named Charles Leclerc, who's in the Ferrari.
Okay.
Ferraris are not really competitive right now. They're actually like down on power.
Yeah.
He somehow muscled the car around onto pole, which was really incredible. Huh. You could tell they're not up to it, though, because the Mercedes, which is much more powerful, passed it without even trying very
hard.
You know, within like two laps. A lot of things happened. Anyways, Max Verstappen, who's in the championship lead right now, was just driving openly and left rear tire just let go. He crashed at 109 miles an hour, just in the lead.
So do you think it was in the 500?
You said there was tire. There was tire.
It was. I can't remember the guy's name now, but. Basically someone didn't get it back on. And can you imagine being that guy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if it was the same sort of thing there, but it's...
He came in, the person came in for a pit, and they put the tire on, and he didn't get it on, right?
Did it
fall off as it went down the pit lane?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, that happens occasionally. Yeah, it's not good, but...
It happened with a couple of people, but anyway.
Well, they at Monaco, at the last race, they had the opposite problem. This driver came in, his name is Valtteri Bottas, mm-hmm. and he's the second driver on the Mercedes team.
Yeah.
He came in, he was doing pretty well, he was in like second or third, you know, fighting for a top position. They went to the guy went to go take the wheel off, and I guess I don't know exactly what happened, but he put the thing on. It revved up to the 20,000 RPMs of those air guns done, and it stripped the nut completely.
Really?
Couldn't get the wheel off.
Oh wow!
So he's sitting there, and the pit stops in F1 should take about 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And it was like 4 seconds.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, disaster.
Yeah,
5 seconds. It's like, oh my God, what's going on here? Yeah. It's like 6, 7, 8. It's like, well, he's out of the race now, and it's like. The thing stripped it so quickly and so fast and so completely, they couldn't get the wheel off.
Wow.
The rest of the weekend they had to fly the car back to England and actually take it apart there, basically.
Huh.
So.
Wow. Well, yeah. I guess I appreciate both.
Yeah.
Indy, you know, the Indy for me, having lived there as a young person, sort of gets ingrained or whatever, and you know, I don't know. It's just. Something you have to, like, if you're from Kentucky, you watch the,
you have
you know,
to watch it. Yeah,
the Derby or whatever.
I know some people who live in Indianapolis now who don't give a toss
about
car racing for most of the year, but they love watching
Indy 500. Yeah, there's a spectacle of it, right?
Yeah,
it's, you know, even I watch the Super Bowl most years or whatever.
I don't
care about football so much, I will admit, if I didn't have that upbringing, if I didn't have that sort of background, I think it would be a little boring to me. And the reason I say that, I guess, is because I don't think it's the racing is boring. I think the coverage is bad. Does that make sense? It's really hard to... No, no. The way that they...
See,
it's hard
I think you might be... If that's your biggest problem, yeah. I think Formula One might be your sport.
Well, that's what I'm... Because I think the focus on the minutia and the, you know, Formula One might be more interesting.
But. Is that what you like? Or do you want to get details?
I don't know. Maybe. You know? I don't know.
I think that's what you should do. When you're done watching, when you kind of need, like, a new show to check out.
Right.
Check out the Netflix Drive to Survive. Kind of get caught up. Watch. You don't have to go all the way back. There's four seasons. But you can go back a couple seasons, get caught up, and just sort of see how they're covering it. Because that's a great... That the way they cover that sport, and that is an excellent way to market the sport. It's gotten people who don't care about auto racing to come back into it.
Right. Okay.
Baseball should be taking notes on this right now.
Yeah. Interesting.
But then, like, you know, once you're back in and you're up to speed, I mean, like, the availability of information, they're giving you all these details beforehand.
Yeah.
There's some great official Formula One podcast to listen to kind of get you up to speed on a race. Give you all the details. I talk to ex drivers. I talk about the course, and. I don't know. I really find it interesting to the radios, like the radio communication between the engineers and the drivers and things like that.
So. Well, maybe, I guess my point is maybe it's something I'm going to start doing again, you know? Well, I did enjoy it, despite my comment about I could be a little bored. But, it is cool. And
well, at least with the Formula One, they're about 56 laps each. So if it is boring, at least it's only 56 laps. So it's getting quicker and quicker. So, you know.
It's a whole problem. Yeah. You know, this was a safe race too, right? So safe race isn't the most exciting. But no, it was good. And the cool part was, I think it was raining here that day, and it was beautiful in Indianapolis. And I feel like almost every year it's weather delayed or you know, there's a tornado or something crazy. Yeah. So I'm glad that they had a nice, clean race. And it was good to see. And Helio Castroneves seems like a you know, cool.
Well, he's won it multiple times.
Good dude.
Before.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
This is his fourth win, I think.
Yeah,
and,
but there's been a long gap between the third and the fourth.
What I want to say is he is actually older than I am, which I like to see. I think he's a couple years older than I am, and so whether it's, I guess, you know, Tom Brady or whoever, the very dwindling, you know, shrinking list of professional athletes who are older than we are, or, you know, I'm older than you, so
Tom Brady might be still actually younger
of course,
than you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually.
Of course. No, I don't think he is. I think
44.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, he's close enough.
He's close. Yeah.
He's close enough. But it's I don't know. It's good to see. And
he's great. He
seems like a good steward of the sport. And,
he is. He's really enthusiastic. He's really passionate about it. Like his nickname is Spider-Man because he always climbs up on the fence.
That's right. Which he did.
When he wins,
he indulged.
And he, like, you know, does this whole like thing. You know,
indulged everyone. And
I used to watch a guy named Alex Zanardi who used to win a lot in IndyCar.
Well, I remember him.
I loved it. He used to. He brought back like the donuts where he would just like.
Right.
Down the track, you know.
And of course, when I was a kid, you know, it was you know, Andretti and Tom Sneva and Rick Mears and Danny Sullivan.
Yeah.
And these people all seemed like old men to me then. And now a lot of these guys are in like their 30s when they were, you know, maybe.
Right, so this is something you probably won't like.
Well, Andretti probably was still pretty old when I was younger.
And it's definitely, so in IndyCar, I feel like you're right. I feel like the drivers kind of get into that position when they're in their late 20s, early 30s. Formula One now, the new trend though is younger and younger and younger and younger. Like they have Max Verstappen, who's been in the sport for 6 years, and I think he's probably only now maybe 28.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, there are other
and
issues.
Charles
with...
Leclerc is like the new driver for Ferrari.
Yeah.
He signed like a 4 or 5 year deal, which is really long for them, and he's 23.
Yeah,
so,
wow. Suffice it to say, neither one of us will be F1 drivers at any point in our lives.
I'm
sure there's no one still listening. Just like with Road and Track magazine, they always would hide like the racing article at the back or whatever.
Oh,
you know?
Man,
I'm kidding. No.
Well, at least we buried it at the back.
No. Anything else before we wrap this up?
Not for today. No,
yeah.
I think I'm good for now.
My goal for the next few weeks is to get my car out.
Yes. I do want to say one quick thing.
Yeah.
I sent you that video about the McLaren F1.
Okay. Yes.
Did you get a chance to watch that?
I haven't watched the whole thing.
Okay.
But yeah.
Watch it. It's super interesting.
Okay.
And then we can talk about it.
Okay.
So, okay.
I will
so,
do that.
Sorry.
I when you sent it to me, I looked at it, and then I haven't revisited it. And I need to.
Yeah.
So cool. And on that note, let's.
I interrupted you.
Oh, sorry.
Your goal was to get your car out in the next week.
And on that bombshell, I hope to get the car out.
Okay.
Put a few miles on it, although I'm kind of scared.
Well,
each one of those miles is it's like a dollar dropping off the
Yeah, I don't know.
Or is it, though? I don't know. I just got to enjoy the thing a little bit. But
yeah. I have a green light to go out again this week.
All right. So let's see if we can do it. And we'll race.
I'd like to. Well, we could do that. My thought was to eventually get a decal for my car that just says, like, Ryan's GT4 support team. I want to be the race. I want to be like the support team for your car.
No, I love it. We could put some lights on it and everything. Well, hopefully
I was looking at CB free. Radios. So.
All right, no one's listening anymore. No one's listening. All right, until next time.
Thanks.